Good morning and welcome to Neocotti View. I'm Peter Newman, and as you, if you're heading south from Clatsop County and drive over the hill or Neocotti Mountain and down into Tillamook County, you'll pass through Manzanita on to Nehalem. And in between, you will find a fairly unique set of, properties. And it is that we're going to talk about this morning. We're going to talk about the Lower Nehalem Community Trust with the chairman of the board of the organization, Olivia Mercado, and treasurer, Georgine Verdun. Thanks for being with us this morning.
Thank you.
Talk about the property. What, you know, for somebody physically who needs a mental map, what areas are we talking about that are part of the trust?
Well, as you mentioned, we're between Manzanita and Nehalem. And our first property that we acquired was called Alder Creek Farm. And that's fronts, one edge of the property is right on the bay, Nehalem Bay. And we just purchased other properties in the area that are, one is adjacent to the farm and another is about a half a mile distant.
I want to talk about the whole point of adjacency and maybe corridors and things like that, which I'm sure are on your mind quite a bit. But how did this whole notion of buying up property for what I gather is a greater use, how did this all come about?
Well, in 2002, property came up, Alder Creek Farm came up for sale, and we wanted to keep it for wildlife rather than to see it all put into development. Bayside Gardens was developing pretty rapidly then, and we wanted to conserve it. A group of us got together and talked about ways and means and decided to form a land trust and try and raise enough money to buy the land. That proved a little bit slower, as you might imagine, than we had hoped. But in order to hold it from development and keep it open, five of the board members, the founding board members, bought the property early in 2003 and leased it to the trust, which we had formed just for this purpose and for acquiring other properties in the area that would benefit the community and benefit wildlife.
Now, so had that been a working farm at one time, is that correct?
Yes, it was a dairy farm owned by a family for several generations.
And what's the concern? I mean, what's your worst nightmare about what could have happened to that property?
Probably that it would have been developed and parceled off into small lots. And, you know, it's difficult to say exactly what would have happened. Perhaps homes, perhaps condominiums, we don't know what that could have been. But the area is really important because it has an edge on the bay. And for wildlife, that's a key factor. For those of us who live in the area, we all know about the various elk herds that are in the area. And there was an elk herd here in Bayside Gardens that was getting kind of pushed out because of the development, and areas where the herd had gone traditionally were being built up, and so there was almost no space left for them. That was a big consideration, yeah. I think.
It's a philosophic matter. That's one of the reasons we live here, is so that we can drive or walk or hike and see these magnificent animals. And there's pressure on the other side, I guess, as more of us want to come here and live, to balance that off. And the farm itself now is back to a kind of a working farm, but a rather unique farm.
Yes, it is. Part of the advantage of this farm and its location, it's a total of 54 acres. It had an orchard and it had some barns. And we had board members who were interested in a sustainable agriculture and growing vegetables. And as we slowly developed our program, we fenced off a portion of the our orchard and the farm area and started a community garden. We had community members that were interested in gardening, and that has grown into a program with about 30 to 35 volunteers, and we give over 1,000 pounds of produce to the North County Food Bank each year from the produce that these people raise. They have enough to take home for themselves, for their own use, but the excess all goes to the food bank.
Now, besides the farm itself, as we mentioned, there's several different pieces of property, and they're not all connected or adjacent. Is there an idea of maybe getting corridors so that wildlife will have an opportunity to make it from point A to point B without having the difficulty of human intervention?
Yes, that was kind of the main thrust for the recent purchases of property that we've had in the last 2 years. The state park, as you know, comes fairly close to the Bayside Gardens area. And on the other side, on the east side of Alder Creek Farm, there's a development that has left several acres open for just as natural habitat. And so our hope was that we would be able to have some type of corridor that would go from the state park all the way over to Nehalem Point. And we haven't achieved that yet, but it's fairly close. And there's some homeowners associations and that type of thing that are kind of in the middle. And so to some extent, that's a green corridor.
Our guest this morning on Neocani View, Olivia Mercado, who's the board chair, and Georgine Verdun, who is the treasurer of the Lower Nehalem Community Trust. And you were just mentioning other landowners. I don't know any more other way to put this other than directly. How do you get along with your neighbors?
Well, we get along as best we can. We have a lot of neighbors who are very appreciative of the work we do and understand it. We have some neighbors that are not quite as comfortable. They're used to seeing development as the best value for property, and not as concerned about open space as the rest of us are. And but we try to keep an open conversation going when differences come up and work them through.
Though, ironically, if I were a neighbor of yours, I would think the value of my property would be improved by having this preservation effort right next to me. And whatever compromises I might have to make with my own property, I think I'm just speaking personally, I'd be happy to make them in order to have such conservation-minded neighbors that would preserve my community.
Well, many people feel that way. We've had a really good response from the from both our capital campaign, in which we raised money to protect this land, and also from neighbors who enjoy seeing the elk go by. They look forward to those visits as the elk pass through from Nehalem Point and the wetlands out in the bay, the islands out in the bay, to the state park. But there's some that when their flowers get trampled, they're not quite so appreciative of having an elk herd.
Well, I see that side of it too, I guess. Well, Georgine, you're the treasurer. How does the whole funding of the organization work? Where do funds come in and where do they go?
We depend primarily on donors and members. That's where most of our income each year goes, and that keeps the organization going. We get grants for some of our programs, like our estuary education program. We have, for elementary school students, we provide a field trips every year to either the farm or one of our other properties or to some other nature location in the area, like the state park.
That's several hundred students each year, isn't it?
That is.
Yeah. It's about 400 students.
400 students.
A little bit under 400.
And they're from local area schools.
From Nehalem and Garibaldi, so that's the Neocani School District. Mm-hmm. And each classroom has one field trip, and we want them to learn about the watershed areas that they live in. So sometimes the students from Garibaldi will go to Tillamook Bay, whereas here the Nehalem students might go to the State Park or to Oswald West, the fish hatchery that's up on 53, Alder Creek Farm. This year we're going to have a group go to Vosburgh Creek property, which is over in Wheeler. And that's also close to the bay, so that the students can learn about different types of habitats and how they function and why it's important for them as residents of the area to understand how that all works and what benefits come from that to the whole community. It's really a benefit to the community. And so we hope that the field trips will help the students in that way, as well as we try to set up the curriculum so that it dovetails into the course of study that they have at the different grade levels and also to the state benchmarks. So all of that's been more or less integrated into what we do with the field trips for the students.
And for land acquisition, I would think that's a fairly costly endeavor, is it, to try to raise money to buy a parcel of land?
It is. It took us nearly 2.5 years to raise the funds, both community contributions and grants to acquire the farm. And this recent set of acquisitions, we held a capital campaign, but we didn't start that campaign until we had found out that there was federal grant, coastal wetlands grant, that would provide for 50% of the acquisition costs, and the state Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board would provide 40%. So all we had to raise for match was 10%. And we thought, well, this we could maybe manage. And it was an exciting exciting time. It took us 2 years to raise the funds, but we completed that campaign in December. We raised just over $151,000 from the community, and the federal government chipped in with their share, and the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. And so we were able to acquire 33 acres of undeveloped land along the edge of the bay, the north edge of the bay.
Well, are there any additional land acquisitions you're looking at, and does that 10% rule continue out to the future? These are tough times.
We won't be so lucky again. The wetlands grant, the coastal wetlands grant, is particular in this way, and it's only for wetlands type properties. So if in fact we find some more wetlands that are available from a willing landowner, then we may have some funds available to use. It's going to be a little more difficult for other lands.
How about taking a big picture here? Because, you know, when we started off the conversation, you were talking about the mission of the organization. I had a thought that flashed through my head that perhaps somebody driving through the area who might live in, let's say, Portland, when they look at the essential rural quality of this community, would say, development? You have to be kidding. It's just a lot of wide open spaces here, and it's not very dense. So what is in need of protecting? I mean, that is a, you know, it looks pretty rural to those on the outside.
I can understand that if you're going to compare it to an urban area such as Portland or other urban areas. But I think the key thing here is the type of habitat that needs to be preserved. And Georgine touched on that a little bit by talking about wetlands. Wetlands are very specific types of habitats, and in Oregon, I know we've lost more than 50%. I don't know the exact number off the top of my head, but it's been more than 50% of the wetlands in the state of Oregon that have been lost to either development or being filled in one way or another. And for example, here in this area that we're talking about, the Bayside Gardens area, wetlands form a buffer during storms, and also as a filter. In other words, all the runoff that would go into the bay is filtered through the wetlands first and then goes into the bay. So that helps protect the water quality of the bay, which then protects salmon, birds, amphibians, and other types of food sources for the salmons. And so this is important in the sense that it not only helps people, but it also is helpful to wildlife. So if you recall some of the stories that were in the news during the oil spill in Louisiana, one of the problems with also with Katrina was that they had lost a lot of the wetlands, which were a buffer, and that made the flooding worse in that particular area. So wetlands have a lot of different functions, and part of our mission is to conserve important habitat, not just some open field in that sense. And so I think that that's why it's a particular thrust that we're taking, a particular focus. And in fact, in a couple of weeks, we're going to have a workshop, and we have a presenter coming in from a wetlands organization, a statewide wetlands organization. Her name is Esther Lev, and she's going to be doing a presentation, also a kind of walk to show people why wetlands are important, what to look for in that particular type of habitat. I don't know if you want to add something to that, Georgine.
That's on March 5th from 10:30 to 12:30. People will gather at the Alder Creek Farm, and everybody is welcome to come. This is going to be our first look for the public at the new property that we've acquired. And we're really looking forward to Esther Lev, who's Executive Director of the Wetlands Conservancy, and her board chair, John Van Staveren. So people are interested. They can call the Lorna Halem Community Trust office. Phone number is 503-368-3203.
And how about a shout out to the marvelous website that you have?
Our website is www.nehalemtrust.org.
You know, as we're talking about the you know, what needs to be restored and preserved in this area, you look back at those photographs of Wheeler with all of the, you know, the mills there and an awful lot of activity, and it's I'm thinking to myself, I just wonder about how destructive of the bay all of that development was, and are you seeing any of the residual effects of that some 100 years later? Is it even possible to measure that? You just sort of look at the pictures and know something must have been done there that probably wasn't very good to the ecology of Nehalem Bay.
My guess would be that first of all, I don't think there have been any real definitive or comparative studies done on this. But I would think that the type of forests that we now have in the hills that surround this area are much more towards a monoculture than what they were in the past. And that's because once things were, the timber was cut, then it was reseeded or replanted. I don't think we have the type of diversity in wildlife that we had before.
Do you work with other equivalent organizations around our community, or even farther afield than that? Is there a network of trusts like this that get together and brainstorm?
We're part of a nationwide group. The Land Trust Alliance is our kind of, not exactly parent organization, but they provide the standards and practices which we adhere to in our policies and in our procedures. So we go to conferences and keep our organization in good order through their help. Locally, we have the North Coast Land Conservancy up in Seaside that we work with closely when it's appropriate. We're one of 23 Oregon land trusts who provide land protection and conservation services all across the state.
Well, it's a national and even international trend, I guess. I was over in Scotland and visiting some friends, and they showed me this incredible parcel of land there and said, oh, that's just part of the John Muir Land Trust. And it just went on and on and on. And you were speaking about the uniformity of trees, all the trees that were cut down in England and Scotland for shipbuilding, and all that lovely heather we see is just the refuse that's left after after lots of forests were cut down. So the land changes, and we're ultimately responsible for what we do after we after we do those deeds. Locally, besides the education program, how can people get involved with this? I remember when I moved here in 2003, and you're one of the first organizations I heard of, and I was just deeply moved by what I saw that you were doing. And how do you get involved?
It's fairly easy. at least we think it is. But we have various activities going on. The workshop that Georgine mentioned with Esther Lev, people can come and participate in that and learn a little bit more about the trust. There's the community garden. Also, we have a need for volunteers to help out with the students when they come on their field trips. And we have work days at different properties. So, for example, in September, we had a work day at one of our new properties here in the Bayside Garden area, and we were clearing out some blackberries. Of course, they're fairly ubiquitous around the area. But also, we collected seed from various rushes and different grasses that we then planted an experimental plot to see how the seeds would grow and whether or not they could be used to kind of supersede other grasses that we don't value as highly, that are kind of invasive but difficult to get rid of. So, you know, we're doing different types of things. Little bit of experimentation, some general cleanup, and various workshops that we have. And well, of course, we had a great pie auction not too long ago that everybody had good fun with.
That was fun. Well, at the conclusion of our broadcast shortly, we'll give you some give you the contact information again. As you've gone through this land and looked it over rather closely, have you encountered any Native American influence?
I'm not sure by encountering. We haven't unearthed any artifacts, but we are working on a project right now that has been in concept for a while, and now we're trying to turn it into a reality, shall we say. And that's what we're calling the Nehalem Teaching Trail. And so we're trying to set up some various habitats using native plants and describing the uses that the Nehalem people used these plants for when they were a larger group living here. And so we've had some contact with the Confederated Clatsop Nehalem tribe, and we hope to develop that as we go along. It'll probably take about another year to have that complete.
Oh, at least. I think that sounds to me like a life's work for either a physical or cultural anthropologist there. I think you could make an entire career out of doing that. What about additional pieces of land? Are there any that I wouldn't want you to get specific, because that would, if you're going to negotiate, you don't want to tell people what land you're looking at. But are there additional pieces of land that might be of interest to you?
We have, we're working currently with the city of Manzanita. A parcel has become available adjacent to some of the parcels that we just recently purchased. And it would be a nice natural area park for the east side of the city. And to find, we've identified a grant source, and we've got a memorandum of understanding with the city to seek grant funds to assist them in the application for these funds and to manage the property for them for several years if we succeed in acquiring.
And the city of Manzanita would be the owners of the property if it is purchased. And that's because of the type of grant that we're trying to pursue right now. But it's still pretty tentative. Until we actually are awarded the grant, then we won't know exactly how this is all going to work out. But it's, again, another project.
You know, it occurs to me as we're talking that, in a way, everyone who's a property owner is their own land trust, and that it is their property and they have an obligation to it. Is there anything you've learned as people working on a land, literally a land trust, any messages to property owners that have their own land and how they should maybe best manage it for best practices?
There's a wealth of information on the internet and available through local organizations such as ours about how to create wildlife habitat on your in your own backyard, how to manage stormwater runoff so that it moves correctly through the landscape. We're always glad to assist property owners with conservation of their own property. It's and some landowners are very conscious of the fact that this land is really ours for only a short time, and we want to leave a legacy for future generations of wise land use and protected common areas.
We're listening to the wind whip up here as we are recording this, proving that nature is having their say in this conversation as well. Well, with the farm, for example, it seems to me that there's two ways of approaching that property. One is that it's a farm, but before it was a farm, it was an open, undeveloped piece of land. Could it have gone either way? I mean, could you have decided to return it from its farm status to its so-called natural status?
Yes, that's what we're working on. Actually, and we believe from all the studies that have been done at Alder Creek Farm that it was a wetlands initially, and that tidal waters as well as storm drainage did come through the farm. In other words, there's a clear, and you can see it today, a clear influence of high tide water coming up Alder Creek itself. And so, and then also in the lower parts of the property, water will collect. For example, if you look at the farm tomorrow morning after this storm, you'll see water on the surface at the farm, and it'll stay there for a while. So yes, it probably was. Whether we'll get it back to where it was before, probably not 100%, but to some degree, yes.
Well, for those who are inspired by listening to you talk about this use of land, how, once again, can people get in touch with the Lord of Halem Community Trust?
They could call our office at 503-368-3203 to inquire about donating or volunteering. You can check our website at www.thehalemtrust.org.
And the next event, March 5th?
March 5th. 10:30 to 12:30, a wetlands walk and talk at Alder Creek Farm and adjacent wetlands with Esther Lev and John Van Staveren of the Wetlands Conservancy.
Well, let's hope for good weather for that.
Yes.
Olivia Mercado and Georgine Rodan of the Lower Nehalem Community Trust, thanks for being with us as the wind whips up this morning. Thanks for joining us. And this is Peter Newman. Thanks for joining us. And we'll see you again next month for Neocotti View.